The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.
Hello and welcome to the Big News Coming Soon podcast. And this week we're coming to you live from Galway City. And we're delighted to be recording in GK Media Studios, just on the edge of Ballybrit. I'm delighted to be joined today by Eileen McHugh. And Eileen has travelled the whole way from Dublin. Eileen, thanks a million for taking the time to come on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for asking.
You've kind of incorporated a bit of a holiday. You're going to do a few of the sights here in Galway for the next day or two.
We're here for 3 nights, so yeah, we'll make the most of it.
Lovely. Have you been here before?
I have, just for hens and things, so I didn't get to see much.
Right.
So it's different eyes this time.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks. Eileen, thanks a million for joining us. I heard your story on an interview at RTE, and I just thought it was an absolutely mind-blowing story, and a story that everyone needs to hear. So I'd love to create more awareness and have a chat with you about your own background. So can I start by asking you a very rude question? What age are you?
45. I forget sometimes. 45, yeah.
Wow, you look amazing.
Thank you.
You don't look a day over 35.
Thanks very much. I'm still 17 inside, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, yeah, that's all that matters. Can we start with where you're from?
I'm originally from Ballymun.
Okay.
Grew up there, and I don't live too far from it now. I live on the Finglas Road now, but in between I've lived in Greece and Waterford, and I've had a few stops with Ballymun.
Mainly Ballymun. Yeah. What was Ballymun like growing up then in the 70s and 80s?
80s and 90s. I just got in there. It was a crazy place to grow up. It was challenging. We've seen a lot of like crazy things growing up as young people there. And yeah, the heroin epidemic. And
from an ignorant person from the west of Ireland, when I think about Ballymun in the 80s, I think about high-rise flats.
Yes.
And a bit of joyriding.
Yeah.
And a bit of messing.
Fires, horses.
Yeah. Was it like that?
It was exactly like that. Exactly like that. Exactly like you see or think.
Lawless.
Lawless. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was great. I've equally as good.
It was fantastic. I loved it.
I literally have equally as good great memories as I do have like sad ones. So yeah, it was a bit of a mix. Yeah.
You were born there. That's where you grew up. What's your earliest memory then of Ballymun?
Of Ballymun. You don't know any different when you're growing up. So, like, there was great community. There were 6 of us in the family. So we'd older siblings. So we always felt kind of cared for and watched out for, even though it was crazy out in the streets. Like, and that's where we were most of the time. We kind of felt safe enough. So, we did our schooling in the Irish school as well, which was not where most of the young people went. So we had that community there, and that kind of gave you some kind of belonging and stability too. So yeah, it was nice.
Did you live in a flat?
No, we lived in the posh part.
Oh, you're in the posh part. Very good.
There is no posh part. No.
Yeah.
No, we lived in the houses. I had a sister lived in the flats, and yeah, it was just a good.
And how was school for you?
I kind of loved primary school. Really loved primary school. It was a small school, mixed boys and girls, and like we spoke Irish all the time. We were a little bit different, and I really enjoyed primary school. I was captain of the Camogie team. I was sporty. I was creative. I liked it.
And then, do you still have the Cúpla Focal?
Cúpla Focal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have to practice now, yeah. But
it's hard to keep it when you're not using it all the time, isn't it?
It's in there somewhere, though.
And then you did okay. You went on to secondary school?
Secondary school, yeah, that was more challenging. I kind of started dabbling with drugs when I was 12 years old, actually, was the first time I smoked a joint. So
was that common?
I think I was a little bit young, maybe, but it was common enough, yeah.
And how does a 12-year-old go about doing... What were you just smoking hash?
Hash was the first kind of drug I messed with, yeah.
How does a 12-year-old go about smoking hash or getting hash?
It was kind of funny because you didn't really have like TikTok or nothing like
even a phone.
And then like with your peers or the older people, like they did look out for the young people, so it wasn't, you just have to get somebody older to get it for you. And sure, we were clueless, we were trying to roll joints, kind of taking tips off watching someone's dad rolling his cigarette, clueless, like it was just total madness. But yeah, those stupid things you do when you're in a little gang at 12.
So then obviously when you started that at 12 in school, you're talking first year, second year.
Yeah.
Did that have an impact then on your academic life?
100%, yeah. Like I moved pretty quickly up the drug chain as well. Like I would have, by the time I was kind of 15, I was taking ecstasy. And yeah, I think the first time I smoked heroin was when I was 16. So I ended up doing my leaving cert. So fifth and sixth year, I was a full-blown heroin addict. So yeah, my school suffered big time.
You were smoking heroin at 15 and 16?
Yes, yeah.
And still going to school?
Still going to school, yeah. I used to, yeah, it was crazy.
That's insane.
Madness. When I look, like I have two daughters now, and I just think like them being that age, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Did the teachers know you were doing drugs?
They knew we were up to something. Like I got into trouble quite a bit, but I don't think they could have imagined I was doing to the extent of what I was doing. I got caught smoking in the toilets one time, and she thought it was hash. And
you know, smoking heroin.
Yeah.
In the toilets of the school.
Yeah.
And what?
Sure, like when you have a problem, when you're addicted to something, it's not something you do to stay cool with your friends. It's for me, it was more something I did alone.
Right. And what happens when a teacher finds you smoking heroin in the toilets?
Well, she didn't know it was heroin. She smelled something funny and I got into trouble, and sure, I denied it or whatever. But you could see I was falling asleep on the desk, and I don't think there was much awareness around drugs at that stage, like the same as my parents. Like I would have got away with lots of things because they were absolutely clueless. It wasn't part of their growing up. So
it's incredible to hear that you were smoking heroin in a toilet in a school at that age, because I know the west of Ireland is always a little bit behind Dublin and a little bit behind everything else, but you know, I was growing up 4 or 5 years behind you then, but then I was into DJing and into the nightclubs and all that, and everywhere I looked it was ecstasy.
Yeah,
it was either hash or ecstasy. But thank God the heroin never made it down this far, in a kind of a youth level anyway. I'm sure it was here in some capacity, but I never recall seeing anyone or hearing anyone or talking about it.
That's how like I got introduced to it, or start getting curious about it. Like that I was on the rave scene back in the 96, 97, and like I don't know whether you did it yourself or whether you remember the come down from that was pretty horrific. Like, so I was seeing people smoking heroin to kind of come down from your ecstasy so you could get on with your day then, or sleep, or
so
whatever.
One fed into the other.
Yeah. And like that again, I was a little bit young for people to be selling me heroin freely. So I ended up getting a job in Quinsworth in Baggot Street, and I met a girl there. She was a little bit older and she was selling and working on the till, so we got pally, and that was my way of getting my supply initially. Sure, down once that door opened, I found it pretty easy to get it pretty much anywhere after that.
Yeah, I'm really lucky that I've never tried drugs. I've never even tried a cigarette. Like, I've been really lucky, but I was aware of it and I was in the same circles of it, and I just, my earliest memory of it at around 16 or 17, you know, going into discos and into raves and things like that, they'd get excited about the brand name of the ecstasy. So it'd be Mitzi's, or it would have been Snowflakes or whatever that was called, and like you'd see this genuine excitement about the brand of the tablet.
Yeah.
You know, but thank God I never took it. But it's interesting that, because I was talking to a man a few weeks ago on the podcast called Peter Townsend, who
I listened to that.
Did
one,
you?
Yeah. It was really good. Yeah.
You know, and it was really interesting how we were talking about the teenagers vaping at the moment. You know, myself and Dave Duke, we were in a teenage disco there, and it's just like 90% of them were vaping. And Peter was saying that he's genuinely worried that that's, you know, and it might be a bit extreme, right? A 13-year-old going from vaping to heroin in the west of Ireland, in a country town in Mayo, but it's also likely. It's also possible.
Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of saying the same thing, how one can lead on to another.
I think that, like, even, I think anyone that's okay, like, is not going to do things like that. Do you know what I mean? I think if you're struggling with your mental health or different things, like, basically what I was doing was self-medicating. I had a group of friends we started with, and, like, that they kind of tried it, moved on. It stuck with me because it was, like, I found it soothing. I was going through kind of whatever I was going through, and it just helped me feel better, and...
Were your parents around?
Yeah, yeah.
Had you a good relationship with them?
I did, and I loved them to bits still. But at that time, like, there would have been, like, alcoholism. Like, my mum would have had to work a lot to support us. So, and it was kind of back then, like, it was like, you're fed and you're watered and you're grand. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Nobody really talked
the
about
essentials.
Things. Or, yeah, so it's different now. So I see. I see what was going on. They split up then, so that kind of affected me, and we didn't have any supports around that. So yeah, just wasn't any supports and I had been through every single, like, when they found out I was taking ecstasy, I ended up going to a local counsellor, them trying to get me into youth groups, and I did it all, but nothing really stuck or helped me.
Like,
at that time,
we were still learning about youth groups, and yes. Like, it was all very new, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were setting them up for the sake of setting them up, really, but they didn't really understand.
Just winging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a service that's there, but
yeah.
What do we do next?
Mm.
And where did the money come from then for the drugs?
So, from an early stage, I had that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. And, like, initially, the first job I had was, I lied, I was 13, and I lied and said I was 15, and I was off selling lions for the Irish Epilepsy Association, so we'd sell them for £1 and we'd make 10p, so that was me every Saturday. I came from a hard-working family, so it's kind of what I knew, do you know what I mean? And then another little thing I had going was, I think I was probably 14, and there was an older friend I had that was a jeweller. So, I don't know, around that time in Ballymun, everyone was into their sovereigns and their rope chains, and it was kind of a cool thing at the time. So I was able to get things a lot cheaper. So I get them off him, mark it up a little bit. And sure, then when the heroin came in, I was selling drugs from an early age. So 16, 17, I was, selling drugs.
Was that common? Were you the only one in your group, or was there a few people?
One in my group of friends. Like, I had to find other friends to be that Eileen with, like, so, yeah.
So you were living two lives?
Yeah.
So your close friends didn't know you were a drug dealer?
They knew to some extent, but, like, they weren't entertaining me, or it was said to me a few times and I'd brush it off, and then eventually we just kind of separated and went different ways, the worse it got, but yeah.
Did you ever get into any tricky situations as a drug dealer?
It's not, there's loads that goes with that. It's not for the faint-hearted, and being a young girl and thinking back, there's some traumatising stuff like that you wouldn't...
What's the memory that jumps out at you?
Oh, God. I remember being in a flat one, and, like, the thing that... There's one that sticks, there's a few I can think of straight away, but one that kind of sticks at me was up in a flat, like, bagging some stuff, getting it ready, and just being in a house where, like, there was babies with, like, crawling around, and there was young kids around, these big bad people kind of, and it was just like, it was just a surreal moment where I was like, what am I doing? And you're looking at them young kids, and the mom's passed out on the couch, and, like, it's just a different world. It's a different world. If you think, the closest thing, probably train spotting, and it was around that time. It was like, that's not far-fetched at all, like, it happens a lot. And then being in danger as well, like, you're a young kid, people think they can kind of pull the wool over your eyes. So you're selling, at the time it was heroin, and, like, you'd give them that, and then they'd have a dud one in their pocket and say, oh, what do you give? She's after giving me the... But you didn't, do you know what I mean? So there's people trying to rip you off, and, like, you're I remember being that age and having a knife in my pocket, like going out. And if you think of my young girls now, like, it's actually madness when I say it out loud. But yeah, it was pretty awful.
And those type of people you're dealing with, like, they have nothing to lose. They don't care.
No. And like when you're taking heroin so long, it's not like you need it. You can't function without it. Like, so if I didn't have anything, I can't get out of bed. Like, so people need it. And so they go to any lengths to kind of, get it. So it took me a while to find my customer base, I suppose. And then, like, I had solicitors and everything coming out to me because they felt safer with me because I wasn't your typical.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very young. I used to go out in my uniform in the morning at 8 o'clock. There was no mobile phones. I'd be on the block and I'd sell a batch or whatever I could. People kind of knew I'd be there and get a taxi down to school. So...
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's madness, like.
Madness, and also a dream for a drug dealer because no one will assume the girl in the school uniform on the corner is selling heroin.
Yeah. And it worked out in the way in my mind was like you sold a batch and then you got to keep your bit for the day, so it didn't cost me anything. Do you know what I mean? So.
But you were never up money. You were only up product.
Jesus, no. It doesn't matter what you... Like, you don't make money in that. Like, well, not the way I was doing it anyway.
You just kind of living for free. You had your bit for free after you sold everything.
Yes. And then, like, people think, you're... Looking back, like, do you feel ashamed? I've been asked before that you did that. Like, did you sold drugs to people? But at the time, like, I had found something that made me feel good. Do you know what I mean? It helped me so much. So it wasn't, I'm going to sell this and ruin people's lives. It was like, I have something that helped me and I'm going to probably... So there was a bit of that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how mad that sounds to you, but that's how I justified it in my mind as well. Like, you're...
Of course, but you're like, you're so immature at that age. You're not thinking about anyone else or thinking about consequences. Mm. You're just thinking about, how do I get through the week?
Yeah, that's it.
You're kind of living week to week, living day to day probably at that stage.
Yeah.
And were you ever arrested then?
No, the kind of guards knew me and I got into a little bit of trouble. And my family was great. Like, they actually sent me to Greece when I was 16. They sent me for the 3 months in the summer holidays. And that kind of gave me a break from my friends and I kind of got to see another way. But yeah, I would have gone missing for days on end. So I'd have the guards looking for me and I would have got pulled in a few times, but never anything stuck, thank God.
And what happened? What did you do in Greece?
My sister, she's 10 years older and she lived over there for 20 years. So she got me a job. She was managing a restaurant, bar, nightclub kind of thing. So yeah, what did I do first? I was a waffle girl. I was making waffles.
Right.
And
were you dabbling in drugs out there?
Well, when I got there, like, I was actually pretty sick when I got there first and...
Sick from drugs?
Yeah, the withdrawals and not able to sleep. So, yeah, my sister held me hand with that, so that was nice. And I went kicking and screaming, I didn't want to go.
Mm.
Obviously, you have a drug problem, I really didn't want to go, but my eyes opened when I got there. It was the first time that I wasn't surrounded by all that chaos and I got to see something else. And it's mad, the first time I went, I remember... Seeing they leave their fridges outside, they leave their tables and chairs outside, and I didn't see buggies and babies everywhere, which is what you'd see in Ballymore. And I kind of, all right, this is different. And then I met a boyfriend pretty quickly and got to hang out with his family, and I kind of seen a nice way of being and just how they all interacted and celebrated different things together. And I was like, all right, it's okay.
Yeah. So are you saying then you came off it then, like, yourself, just naturally you
I was on and off it for, like, yeah, I've done cold turkey, I've been in detox, I've done all the ways, nothing ever stuck.
Wow.
Mm.
That's an incredible story. And so you stayed in Greece then for 3 months?
Went back to school then, straight away when I got back into the thing. But even though the going to Greece didn't work that time, it gave me a feeling of something different that I would chase in the future. Do you know what I mean? So I wasn't as in it when I got back. I wanted to get back out there, but I just didn't know how.
I'm just blown away by how lucky you were in a lot of aspects. Like, you're very unlucky that you got tied up in drugs at 12 years of age, but very lucky that you were never arrested or bet up or stabbed or hurt.
Yeah, well, I would have been in fights and I would have been like
a few scraps.
That would be normal enough. Like growing up in Ballymore, you kind of need to be able to stick up for yourself. And so, yeah, that would have happened for sure.
Right.
But yeah, like I always stayed on the outside. Like, so I had friends over in Pier Street and Ringsend, and I was kind of the one that nobody really knew loads about, but knew that I could get things. Or yeah, so it was a little bit different.
You're a little bit smarter than everyone else.
I don't know about that, but probably more stupid. But like, I was a work and functioning addict, I suppose I worked in Annabelle's nightclub. I've heard of it. And that, like, I don't know how much I can say on this. You can delete it afterwards.
I don't want to delete anything if you're happy with it, but go on.
Like that, you'd make contacts in the nightclub as well.
There'd be a few high flyers in there.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, I would have started off selling ecstasy and things. I worked in the members bar, and then sure, you get to know people, you get... Yeah, so yeah, I was kind of smart that way. I was always good at, I suppose, networking, if you want to call it, or like reading people, or being able to kind of spot an opportunity and develop it, or I don't know what way you want to call it, but it was different than the others in my area.
You strike me as somebody that might have been kind of outgoing and bubbly and easy to approach.
Yeah. I love people.
And good looking.
Thanks. Yeah. I love you.
Yeah.
I love people. I love people. People are my passion. I just love helping them out, which is, if you think of a drug dealing or whatever, it was like helping people out. Or you can't get, I can get you this. And it's like...
But you're helping them to help yourself at the same time.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then how did you stop then? Like, what was the final nail in the coffin?
I stopped. I went into... recovery when I was 29 years old. So
how did that come about? You don't just wake up and say, right, I'm going into recovery today now.
I was wanting to change for a long time, like, and I found the system really hard, like, so
was there like a defining day or a moment that you were like, fuck this now, I don't want this anymore?
Loads of days like that, but the real one was when I was actually physically and emotionally like dead. I actually ended up in Beaumont Hospital a couple of times, and I had my daughter. She was like, I had stopped while I was pregnant and when I had her, and then when she was one, I started using again. And it's like when they say you pick up where you left off, like I quickly went downhill, and at that stage I found crack cocaine as well. And within a matter of months, I was on the floor. Like, that took it to new levels. So, yeah, I ended up in Beaumont Hospital, and, I was on the verge of losing my daughter. So, like, and it's like, I think I would have kept killing myself if I didn't have her. I probably just would have kept going and going. But, like, I knew I'd more to offer, and I knew, like, when you're looking at your child, like, that's just enough to make you, yeah, dig deep.
Do you just have one child?
I have two.
Two.
Yeah, so I have a 19-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Wow. And you have a good relationship with them?
Ah, they're amazing.
Oh, good.
Like, superhuman beings, and they're just the best. Like, it's great.
So where did you go then after Beaumont? Like, where did you go into recovery?
I was trying to get into a place in Dublin, and it was so hard. There was waiting lists, and I was at my wit's end. So I was lucky enough to own my home. So I actually sold my home and paid for my own recovery after numerous times trying to be on programs and things. So I sold my house and I went to a place in Leeds called Detox 5, where they basically knock you out for 5 days, so you're over the worst. Like, it gets you through all the physical horrendous withdrawal symptoms, but you're left then just a shell of like yourself. And I had to wait then 4 weeks before I went into residential treatment, which was in Ashoyre in Wexford.
And who looked after your daughter?
My mum. And yeah, my family's amazing. Sisters, like, they're great, like, yeah.
So when you came out then, How long was the recovery period?
So, probably from detox to getting out of Ashoiree was, I'd probably say, 2 months. And then you have 2 years aftercare. And I think you're always recovering.
Yeah.
There's loads of different stages to it. Like, but yeah.
But then you have to start again. You've no house, you've no job. You're back to square one again.
Yeah, I've started over numerous times.
What age are you at this stage?
Like, I'm now.
No,
oh,
when
at
you...
the 29, 30. Yeah.
You've had enough of it at this stage now in your...
Yeah, so I think I came out of... I split up with my partner kind of during my treatment in recovery, but I found my next partner in rehab, so...
That's common enough, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've heard that story a good few times now, but
yeah,
it's...
It never works out.
Does it not? I was just going to ask because it could be an amazing support story, but...
Yeah, and I suppose it has worked out, but like they do warn you, they tell you, they... yeah.
Yeah. Like you're in a vulnerable state too, so I can understand how it would happen.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it was great till it wasn't. Like it was, I wouldn't change anything, and I think everything happened for a reason, and like any challenging situation I've been in has helped me build character and find ways out of it, so like I'm never afraid of an odd challenge or a new start or taking something on.
What was the new start then after that?
So I moved to Waterford, had my second daughter, and like hairdressing has saved me so many times. I'm a hairdresser by trade. And
when did you pick that up, or when did you start doing that?
When I was 23, I always had a flair for it. I always had a passion for it, but just never pursued it. So
would you do it on the side? Like, would you do?
No, I did on.
You'd worked in salons, or
yes, yeah, so I did me training with Peter Mark.
Okay,
and like that, I would have been taking drugs through that. I kind of stopped heroin, but was doing other things. So yeah, on and off like that. So I did a 4-year apprenticeship in a year and a half. I just loved it. Like when I was supposed to have 2 models in, I'd have like 3 or 4. Looking back now, like the reason why I took drugs, I was diagnosed with clinical depression. I have ADHD, I have all sorts of things going on. But when I stood behind that chair doing hair, I was somebody different. Like
None of them labels mattered.
No, I was like a different person. I was so confident,
yeah,
so creative. And then like the day would end and I'd go back to kind of the way I was. But yeah, it gave me that feeling of, like, I suppose art, the way that does for people, or a purpose. And then again,
yeah,
making people feel good and better and getting to speak to people that you wouldn't normally get to speak to. So yeah, that was my bread and butter the whole way through. Like,
so you were hairdressing then down in Waterford, or what did you do?
Yeah, I was actually told not to work for 2 years in recovery, which is kind of strange.
How do you support yourself then? Or
yeah, like
there's benefits, is it? Or
yeah, that's what I was basically told.
You could slip back in quite easy,
but like that, you have a lot of work to do for the 2 years after. And
yeah,
if you get caught up in working the way I worked, like I've always worked a lot, and I do it to death. Like, so yeah. But I didn't listen to them again.
Okay.
And I ended up, I built up a really nice business there, starting to do neighbours. And yeah, so that was good.
And then eventually you moved back to Dublin?
Back to Dublin then.
How long did you stay in Waterford for?
6 years maybe. 6, 7 maybe.
No drugs?
No drugs.
Nothing?
No. It was all recovery. I loved that place. It was like...
Did you find it easy?
No, it's recovery.
Yeah,
no,
but like being in Waterford away from all,
yeah,
the...
that's the only way to do it. I think if I had been back in around similar people, I don't know whether I would have done so well, for
they
sure.
They say you're the average of your 5 closest friends, isn't that it?
Yeah, I believe that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, moving away, like actually just being removed from everything you know, 100% helped. But yeah, came back then stronger. And
But what I meant by, did you find it easy living in Waterford in terms of, were you free? Did you feel free in Waterford? Or was there always a constant kind of like, was there kind of like a little devil on your shoulder the whole time niggling away at you?
Like, you're not always 100% confident in yourself. So like building yourself up from recovery stage and like even... No, that was hard. Like, and where I used to feel it was, you know, even being like outside the school with the other mammies, or like you'd be like, it was like you didn't belong in that world, or I had to figure out a way how to blend, because like I didn't feel like part of anything or nothing. So I think even 5, 6, 7 years is early recovery. Like there's a lot of stuff going on when you're rebuilding your life like that. Like,
that's really interesting. So you felt like a bit of imposter syndrome at the school gate.
Oh, it was crazy. I'd be like, oh my God. And I'd feel like the conversations were fake, or, do you know what I mean? It was just, I just felt like I didn't belong. So what I did was just immersed myself in the community. Like, I met a lovely group of women and we did a parenting course together. Part of my recovery was doing a parenting course. I met some amazing women. We set up then a women's group after that, and slowly like that, I just immersed myself in the community. Like,
what was it that was giving you the sense that you didn't belong there? What were the thoughts in your head when you were standing at the gate? What were you saying to yourself in your mind? Why did you say, I feel out of place here?
Like, I wanted to belong there and I knew it had a lot to offer. But when you come from, like, when you're an addict, like, you're consumed by all day, every day, with how you're going to get it, where you're going to get it, trying to think of the next 3 days ahead. Like, there's no room for it normal. So this is like me learning to walk again, like, so with totally different people that didn't know me, that didn't...
And of course, it's all in your head, because the other mammies are looking at you going, she's just a lovely hairdresser from down the road.
Yeah.
And they're not looking at you any different.
No.
Like, from outside looking in, you blended in the same as everyone else.
Yeah.
But inside your head, you're tormenting yourself.
Tormented. I remember it was just so weird. It was a really challenging, like, time, and lonely time, I suppose, because you feel like you're being fake. But like that, I'm really open about my recovery, and like that through the hair again, meeting people and telling your story. Like,
do you find that telling your story keeps you away from it? Does it help?
Like, back then, definitely, yeah. Because when you open up to people, they open up. I don't know, like, I don't know what your relationship is like with your barber, but like,
oh, he will tell you, he is my psychologist, psychotherapist, he's my best friend.
It's magic.
He is everything. I tell him where the treasure is.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. What happens in the hairdresser's chair as well. And when you're open with people, like, they tell you things and then they're looking at you as kind of advanced in whatever, because like I ended up studying psychology after that as well. I had an interest in helping people, and it was just lovely. And then when you're helping other people, you kind of feel that, all right, I'm not doing too bad. So
yeah. And everyone has a story and everyone has an addiction of some sort, whether it's a bar of chocolate or cigarettes or something. I think everyone can relate deep down in some way, shape or form, you know, and
100%,
people, I think most people are understanding.
For sure.
And like you said earlier on, like, alcoholism is in nearly every house in the country, do you know, and we're only codding ourselves if we're saying otherwise.
I know. I think the situation in Ireland is like, it's different. It is like, I think we have a normalised view of abnormal drinking. I think we just look at it like, ah, sure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But it's really damaging, and I would see alcohol the same as like any other drug. It's just more affordable, which is probably worse. It's easier to get, which is harder to stop. Like, I don't know, it just, as a nation, I think there's a lot of work to do around that.
Yeah, like, there really is. What brought you back from Waterford to Dublin then?
Just a really bad breakup. Like, I probably wouldn't have left Waterford. I wouldn't have left Waterford, but I kind of had to. So even though I didn't want to come back up, and I was reluctant to bring the girls back up to Ballymun, I had to go back to the family home. Like, and that was difficult, because like the things you don't, they hated coming up as well. Like, they weren't feeling it at all. And I remember kind of saying, why is it so, even though they came up to visit all the time, they were in my mum's and they were gone again, like, but going to school and the kids were wilder, they were like, oh my God. Yeah. Or like, why is it so dirty, or like the little things that I would have grown up in, so I wouldn't have noticed until my kids say it back, like, why did they, like, I know you see a lot of kind of people addicted to drugs, even just around the shops, and they look a bit kind of scary when you're not used to it, and that opened my eyes to what's happening in Ballymun as well. Like
through their eyes.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, you're right. Or
yeah, it was just normal for you.
Yeah, so seeing their reaction and being like, damn, it was just a really difficult time trying to adjust to that. But like that again, we immersed ourselves in the community. I went back playing camogie after 20 years.
Brilliant. And like a Mothers and Others, or was it?
Yeah, but then I ended up playing proper for the proper team, and it was just a brilliant experience. But
excellent.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really
Are the
good.
Girls into camogie now?
Not anymore.
No.
One's a ballerina and one's just a diehard hairdresser now as well.
Excellent.
So,
yeah. Ballerina is cool. And
yeah, yeah.
So. And she'll never go hungry being a hairdresser.
That's it. But like that, being in the community with kind of they made friends and sure, they're happy again. Like, but it took time. It took a bit of an adjustment.
B&B Homes make your dream home a reality. We do it all from start to finish. Your one-stop shop to becoming a homeowner. Log on to brbhomes.ie.
So you're still living in Ballymun now?
Only down the road. So I'm in Finglas now, but yeah.
Okay. And what's Ballymun like today? The flats are gone, are they?
The flats are gone. Still all the same problems there, like
antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, I don't know if you know anything about the GAA or anything, but once you're in, they get you in. I ended up on the committee for the Satanta GAA Club as acting vice chairperson. So,
excellent.
And like that, when I came back from being outside for a long time, I could really see all the things that needed to change. We had a couple of young people that were being groomed, just call it as it is, and like they were involved with crack cocaine, and we were trying, as the committee, we were trying to find supports for them. Had their parents down, they were only 13, 14, and that like hit me like so hard, thinking that like I went through that in the 90s, and to think that it's still the very same today, and I get upset thinking about it. Sorry, it's still shitty, like, yeah, there's still a lot of work to do. Sorry.
Oh, you've nothing to be sorry about. Do you feel like Ballymun is forgotten about?
Do you know what? It's kind of strange because it's not forgotten about, right? Because there's so much funding and things that go into Ballymun, but like something needs to change. We need different approaches and different... yeah, it's sad that it's that many years like that.
What would you like to see changing?
And like, it's true what they say about Ballymun. The community is like solid. Like, some characters in it, and there's so much talent in it as well. That like things that nurture that. Like, we set up when we were in the GAA, and those young people were struggling. We couldn't find anything for them that like wasn't any different. So we kind of decided it was coming into winter actually, and we were trying to keep them engaged through the winter months, especially just these lads. And we ended up bringing them cooking. We ran a course with the school across the road for, I think it was 8 weeks. We did, like, they were learning how to do healthy spice bags and different things. And they loved the interaction outside of the club. So then we brought that finished. We brought them to the gym because they were loving the extra stuff. And then after that, it was like, all right, what can I give them? Could we teach them hairdressing and barbering and give them scissors and blades?
Where was the funding coming from for these?
Do you know where it came from? The first one, the hairdressing course came from, we just reached out and it was five local businesses just chipped in for the money for the mannequin heads and the different tools we needed.
Wow.
And obviously we were teaching it voluntarily. All the work through the club is voluntary. So that's how that went. And then Dublin City Council, once we kind of ran the pilot programme and seen the interest, Dublin City Council gave us some funds to get some proper equipment and run it again.
I love hearing these stories about the local businesses, you know, donating, because I don't think they get enough credit sometimes.
No.
Running a local business in a town, whether you're in Galway or Castlebar or Ballymun, every day of the week somebody comes to your door with a handout. Every single day, before you pay anyone,
yeah,
there's somebody, and they could come through the door 10 times that week. And I know from being involved in businesses and friends running businesses, it's really, really challenging.
Mm.
But there are times like that that make such a huge difference. You know, yeah, those five businesses that chipped in, they're not just donating mannequin heads, they're changing the community.
Yeah, and I think, like, as a business, if what we're doing resonates with you, do you know what I mean? And, like, I think at that stage of the game, everyone could see kind of what's happening in Ballymun. So
you had this brainwave to set up a hairdressing college, is it?
We just labelled it as a programme. So it's like, just me, I told you my story, and my sister as well. She's in recovery from alcohol addiction and different things, but she's a psychotherapist now. So we ran it with the hairdressing and barber and being the attraction. But during that programme, there's like wellness practices, there's kind of wellness techniques. We talk about different topics that might be challenging for them, and it's all done through the hair and barbering. So it's
what's it called?
Hair Together.
Yeah. Hair Together.
Yeah.
So that's your brainchild.
Yes.
And your sister came in and supported you and helped you through it.
Yeah. So we're a multi award winning social enterprise. We won a global award. We've won a couple of national ones.
Tell us about the global award.
Do you know a brand called Kevin Murphy?
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
I've often been sent Kevin Murphy products.
Ah, stop.
I think just for the crack more so than anything else.
So they ran I work backstage for them. So I travel and do like Paris Fashion Week, Copenhagen Fashion Week. I get to do all that cool backstage stuff. I'm also an educator for them. So they do, it's called the Kevin Murphy Icon Award. So it's like the whole network of hairdressers and the whole of the Kevin Murphy community all over the world, every corner. They get to, people nominate them for what they're doing in their community, whether it's in regards to environment or any way they're making a difference in their community. So yeah, we won it, the four.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Congratulations.
Back to Ballymun, it was great.
And where is the Kevin Murphy brand based? Where are they from?
They're Australian.
Okay.
The distributors here are in Cork, National Beauty.
They're nearly in every salon, aren't they? Like they're very well.
They're a high end brand, so they're kind of posh.
Yeah.
And they're really good quality, like, and they're kind of so environmentally conscious. That's why we use them all the time. They're amazing. They're big supporters of ours as well. So.
Ash, you're a typical hairdresser. You're trying to sell them the fancy shampoo going out the door.
Come here, it's worth it.
Oh, your hair will be glowing. I'm telling you.
Yeah, no, it's great.
That's the drug dealer coming out right now. Pushing the products on them,
An amazing brand, literally. They are. I use it all the time and I'd recommend it happily.
So let's come back to Hair Together then.
Yeah.
And the program, and like, who was paying you? How are you supporting yourself and this program at the same time?
So at the start, I'm working and doing my normal job and doing a bit of traveling and educating as well. I'm a freelance hairdresser too. So
How many hours a week was this program running?
So we started it off like in the evenings. So I just swapped doing the club stuff, like the vice chair, and just put the energy into Hair Together, which was taken off. There was other organisations looking to run it. Word of mouth got out. The young people are actually loving it.
And how many
waiting lists?
How many people had you to begin with?
Anytime we run the course, it's like with 10 people. We do it for 10 weeks, one day a week for 10 weeks, with 10 people.
Right. Are they the numbers now as well?
Pretty much. Yeah.
10 we've people for 10 weeks.
Yeah, we've adapted a few. We've a couple more offerings now. Like we'll do a 5-week hairdressing one or a 5-week barbering one. Some of our clients would be other social enterprises like Pace, Tousla, like we're in TY and Trinity Comprehensive there in Ballymun. So Justice Department, young women in prison.
Wow. So it just kind of gives you an insight into the world of barbering or hairdressing, and you decide whether you like it or not from there, whether you want to pursue it or not. Is that it? You're obviously not a qualified barber at the end of the...
No, you don't even need to have an interest in hair. Do you know what I mean? It's like you do learn some really cool hair. Like I educate all over Ireland. We do some really amazing hair and all the fashion stuff. But I got really inspired by the backstage work I do away, where we kind of... So I'm on the International Session Styling team, and like we fly in from everywhere to work together all the time. And it's like the teamwork and how we're all on the same. It's like I was looking at us one day. I went up to the toilet and I could see the whole team working. It's like a finely tuned machine. Yeah. Like we don't even have to speak to each other, and we all work on our different strengths and weaknesses. Like, you don't have to be great at everything, but like, it's just amazing how we work. So I wanted to bring that to our program too. So basically, we learn a different skill each week, and we incorporate all the wellbeing practices and education into that, to the end goal, which is producing like a catwalk style fashion show where they get to invite their friends, their family, they do a model. We have a whole catwalk, they work with designers, they work with the videographer, they work with, and we have a whole special kind of day where their key workers come, their teachers come, and it's always a big deal. So we let them experience success.
What age group are they?
From 11, we've had them up to whatever, like some of the women are 50, 55.
And what's the gender breakdown? Like, is it 50-50 or is it 80% women?
I'd say probably 70 women, 30
men,
yeah. And like the young fellas we have with us just do so well. There's one, just one little fella, like he started with us and he came, he had kind of different things going on. It was hard for him to concentrate. He wasn't sticking to anything else, and he ended up coming for the barbering, but his friend came along with him to kind of hold his hand while he was doing it, and like two skitters messing the whole way through the first couple of weeks, but ended up just having an unbelievable experience. And like that little fella comes back now, he's only 14, and he will do demos in front of a load of girls in the school, or like he's so confident. And he works part-time in the local barbers after school now. So to see people on, and we've loads of stories like him, just kind of finding the confidence to be able to put themselves out there. And yeah,
it's an unbelievable skill to have, and it's so underrated, because I know two barbers. I know one in Mayo and I know one in Donegal, and they're like, their heads are wrecked trying to find barbers and trying to keep barbers.
It's so hard.
It's so hard, and there doesn't seem to be anyone coming up through the ranks in the west of Ireland.
I know, and it's a shame. Like, I think everyone just wants to go to college now, and I don't think people know how much you can actually make in the hair world. I don't think people, like, the salon I'd work in, I'd have a lot of solicitors and a lot of kind of clients like that, and like, there's some you'd be earning more than. Do you know what I mean? You get talking about different things, and I don't think people understand what a great industry it is. Like, I'm 20 odd years hairdressing and I'm still not bored. Like, I still try to do hair one day a week, even though I'm running the organisation and that, because I just love it. But I have learned so much from doing hair. Like, I actually, when we realised that this Hair Together programme was a thing and we had to set up as a limited company, and like, there was a lot for me to learn, and I did not have the skills, so I went to study business, and like, I done that and I realised that I've been doing business my whole life, like, and I kind of got confidence, even though like through the college experience it was great and I learned loads, but most of the things that have us where we are today is the stuff I learned in the salon, how to deal with people, how to, like, loads. So it's amazing, like,
yeah.
And that kind of shocked me. I thought I needed to do more college, I needed to, but a lot of the things I developed over the year as a stylist.
I spent a couple of years in Aldi, and you know, I liked it at the start, and then the reason I didn't like it towards the end was because they don't really allow you, they don't nurture your creativity. It's very black or white, and it's very green or red. You have to hit all the green targets, and if you don't get them, they go red, and everything's very, you know, black or white. And that's why I didn't like it. But I've often said to myself since I've left Aldi, God, the amount I learned that I didn't even realise I was learning, and how much I've implemented. And, you know, one of the things they'd say to us in Aldi was when we were doing our management programme, the area manager would come in, and if he saw you putting the bananas on the shelf, he'd go mad. He'd say, you don't put the bananas on the shelf. Like, he said, you can't run the store when you're stuck down putting the bananas on the shelf. You have to take a step back.
Very good.
You know, and don't be afraid to take a step back. We were always busting ourselves to make sure everything was done and getting our hands dirty and getting stuck in and trying to help everyone. But then another corner of the shop would fall to shite because you were over here trying to make sure the potatoes were on sale or whatever. And he'd say, just take a step back. Take a step back, walk around the shop and delegate and everything will get done.
That's great.
Yeah, and I learned so many things like that from. Another thing that we learned a lot was we had this really enthusiastic American area manager, and he'd love to see complaints coming because he'd say every complaint is an opportunity to make a customer for life.
Very good, a lesson.
Yeah. And I'd always say that, and I'd always say that to businesses now, take every complaint as an opportunity to get a customer for life.
Unreal.
You can win them around and have them for the rest of your life. So how many people have gone through the Hair Together programme now, roughly?
180.
180?
Yeah, it's going great. The last 20 that went through the programme, I didn't even meet once. It's like what you're talking now, like we're at scaling level now, so we have our educators and I didn't meet, even though that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
It's like you said, I learned so much around business and like that we got supported through Social Entrepreneurs Ireland and Rethink Ireland, and that's where all the kind of those skills developed. So I'm super proud, and now we're ready just to like explode. We have an unreal team of educators and volunteers now. So
how many people are involved now?
Well, there's four main ones that run it. There's myself, my sister, Nigel's finances, and Joy is like fundraising and events. And then we have probably six subcontractors, the ones that go out and do the classes and things for us.
It's a non-profit?
Not profit, yeah. We're not a charity, so like it's a, I like to call it profit for purpose. So whatever profit we make goes back into the scaling, and like we're literally just after securing a premises in the heart of Ballymun. So we're super excited about that. We've been doing all this since 2020, like out of my ma's garage.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been mental. And it's only actually since January that I've left all my real jobs, and we're just focusing 100%. That's when we were able to develop our educators and get our strategy for the next 3 years ready. So yeah, we've an amazing premise.
So you're going 100% into this now?
100%.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And what's paying the bills then? How are you surviving?
So now we were able to secure some funding from Rethink Ireland. I don't know whether you know them. They're an amazing organisation.
No.
So that's, they help like social enterprises like us. So we have their support for 3 years. So they were able to cover some of mine and Gemma's, my sister's, salaries for the next 3 years.
Okay.
And to run one of the groups in Ballymun. What happened was we were kind of going to where who could pay us, so Tuaslid, the Justice Department, and we were out of Ballymun altogether. So like that, we applied for this funding to bring it back to where we could.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like help from everybody. It's literally taking the whole community to get this going. And like that, what we're doing, just it's just attracting all the right people. So we're very excited.
So what's going to happen in this premises then?
It's actually two units. I actually went in to rule it out, but it's perfect. I don't really ever have that feeling when you walk in somewhere and you're like, oh my God, this is it.
Right.
It's two units. So one side will be the academy where all the classes and things go on. And then the other side will be a work and functioning salon. So where we fall down now is like people go through our course. We have to building such a great community that we've nowhere for them to go after the 10 weeks unless they come to help us with another course, but like everybody can't do that. So that's where we'll kind of generate our own funds through the salon side, but also be able to support work experience and different things for the young people or the people that have experienced prison. That's really hard for us to do now at the minute.
So will there be a salon there where people can walk into?
Yes.
Off the street?
Yeah, 100%.
And all the money then stays in the programme?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's a different business model. We're kind of breaking ground here, but we've loads of support. Like, yeah.
And what's the goal then? Have you got a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan, or what would you like to see happen next?
So just to have this salon up and running and functioning and the community feeding into it. And I think it's just going to be a mecca for great hair and good vibes and opportunity for so many people. And then like that, we've gone kind of outside of Dublin. We've been in Cavan and Monaghan too. But it's really hard work, like to kind of, so that to operate a little bit more smoother. But I think once we get our base, like once we have our home, all the other stuff will happen. Working from my mum's garage and having to travel to where we're going and like that, we've so much support, especially the Hair Cafe in Smithfield. I do have to give them a shout out. They let us use their premises free whenever we have graduations or courses going on. So
what's that?
It's a salon in kind of where I was based for a few years, and they were actually our number one support, our first supporters. I went around looking, had this idea of kind of young people that were in trouble to bring them into the salon. I got so many no's, and she was 100% yes from day one. So yeah, she's been great.
What's it called?
The Hair Cafe in Smithfield.
The Hair Cafe in Smithfield.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, so it's amazing.
Smithfield's in the city, is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of city centre. Yeah, it's a really cool... You must know Smithfield.
I know of it. I know of it. Yeah, yeah.
It's a really cool place.
Not a million miles away from the courts, is it?
No.
It's just around the corner it's an incredible story. And I mean, just like Eileen McHugh, who went from selling drugs in her school uniform on the corners at 8 o'clock in the morning to being ups and downs and ups and downs and going to Greece and coming back and going to Waterford and coming back and then setting up this incredible business to help other people and keep them off the street and keep them off the corners. Like, your drive and ambition is incredible considering you're not in it for the money.
Yeah.
You're in it to help people and help these young people and get them on the straight and narrow. And you're providing a service there that should be provided by the government, but it isn't.
I know. I think it's like that. Like, the answers are in community. You have loads of people coming outside with great ideas. But I think it's the lived experience where we really have the edge. And then as we've developed, like, and the support we have around business and strategy and all the other stuff, I think it's just a combination of everybody working together that has this so successful, because it couldn't have worked just on my passion and drive. Like, I didn't have all the things this needed. Do you know what I mean? And I think lots of people that come out of recovery have this burning desire to help other people. It's just a natural thing. And look, sure, you might have an idea, but then you don't have the resources or... Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's only so much you can do until that fire goes out. But like, we didn't let go, and I'm not afraid to reach out and ask for help when I need it, or tell the things I need to work on, or work on the things I need to work on. But we've a whole team now, and it's just incredible. But I think all the answers are in community. I think the model we have is really working, and there's lots of other people interested. So like you said, after we're settled in the salon, I hope we are able to help other people with their ideas. Like, the model can be used not just for hair. You could have yoga together, dance, whatever together. It's not the hair and the barbering is literally just the tool we use to attract them in, but you could literally use anything.
The beauty about podcasting is it goes all around the world and you don't know who's listening to it, but also there might be someone somewhere listening that can help in some way, shape or form. And if you were to put a call out today, what do you need?
Well, the building is something that we don't have experience with. So we're going to need help around all things. We're in the middle of the change of use and negotiating the terms at DCC. So I don't know, architects or anyone that can help us make it. Like, I really want to make it really cool space that the young people want to come. So like, I have no design skills at all, anything like that. So like that, volunteers within the wellbeing space, the hair space, and then like the main thing, like we've lost all the magic, like funders. If there's anyone that hears what we're doing and kind of can help financially as well, it's the only block we have to scaling quicker.
We're looking for a philanthropist who wants to invest and help local communities.
Yeah.
Help keep people off the street, help people better themselves, get more education, and not looking for their name to be all over it, but just to do something really good.
Yeah, it's like we had this, we got a youth advisory board together. Like, it's only since January, like I said, we kind of are really kind of honing in on what we do. And we got a youth advisory board together, and one of the young people... it was me and there was six of the young people, and we were kind of, what did you like, what did you not like, trying to make it better, and we're on the right track anyway. they all loved the programme. But one of the little, like another fella, 15, he turned around and he said, oh, do you know, my youth worker said you saved my life. And I said, oh really, what do you think? And he said, I think you did. And I said, why is that? He said that he was mixed up with the wrong people, he was hanging around with the wrong people. And I said to him at the end, like, there was a lump in my throat. There was two of the girls with tears in their eyes as well. And he said, give us a sec.
Take a drink there if you want. Take your time. Take your time.
Such a whinger. I cry every day.
Not
like,
at all.
It's like, I spent years holding stuff in. So now, like, if I'm happy, you know it. If I'm sad, I know it. You know it.
I know. I'm exactly the same.
But this one nearly killed me.
That's fine. That's fine. Take your time.
Right. So basically when he said that you saved my life, I said, well, I don't think so. I think all we did was create the space for you to find things you're passionate about and find your strengths for you to save your own life. Do you know what I mean? So he really felt like, so it's like we focus on what's right, not what's wrong. And when I think of myself going to the counsellor, going to the drug counsellor, going to the clinical depression person I was talking to, it was all trying to fix topical stuff. Like, but I think what we do, and why it's special, is we don't want to know. You might be referred to us because you're struggling with this, that and the other, but literally it's just us and you, and we're going to focus on like your good bits and what you can. So I think there's one fella comes to do it, he's a hardcore businessman, and he says, sometimes I think it's too rough, but it's like, there's not a sob story on the planet that can stop you doing what you want to do. Doesn't matter your background, and I really believe that, and we try and kind of let them experience success so they can believe in themselves. So it's like an inside out job, basically. And that's why we're different. And it's a community where they can still connect afterwards. So, yeah.
I think what a lot of people in rural Ireland, and maybe I've said west of Ireland probably a bit too much, because I keep meaning to say rural Ireland. And I think what people in rural Ireland don't understand is you have to grow up a lot faster in Ballymun than you do down here. We're very much protected, and you know, we're a country lifestyle, and you know, we're not exposed to that much crime or drugs or antisocial behaviour. But up there, you're reared in it.
Yeah, and after experiencing both for me kids, I would definitely like my grandchildren to grow up somewhere rural. Like, I think it does build character, it builds all of these things, but like, is it worth it? I don't know. But saying that, I wouldn't change a thing, because I really feel like I'm in a space now where I'm probably one of the happiest people I know, and I sometimes, it's just like, it doesn't matter what happens on the outside, I feel bulletproof. I have enough tools and enough resilience and enough experiences to give me the confidence to go forward, but I still want like the kids to go through what I did. So I suppose, but your path is your path.
And for a 15-year-old to approach you and say, you saved my life.
I know. To even say it in front of a group of strange peers, like they didn't all know each other, and
it's incredible and it's a credit to you, but it's also very sad.
Yeah. But I think it's getting worse for young people. I actually think it's worse. Some of the stuff we hear now, like, I think it's worse.
What are you hearing now?
I just think they've so much more to deal with. I think even when I was doing stupid stuff when I was younger, like, we still had kind of morals and lines we didn't cross. I think there's a lot of that not there anymore. We had some kind of respect for authority. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if you're ever around Ballymun now, they're going around on these bikes, like just up on the paths, terrifying people. There's gangs openly dealing drugs. Like, RTE did a thing there not that long ago. I think Ballymun has 10 times the national average, and they recorded them for 3 days, I think it was. And they're in the video, like in the day, and the kids coming home from school at 2:30. And they're just there on them chance 3 days. The amount of stuff we see, or the, like, that's normal. That you don't, but you actually, like, it's scary. It's intimidating. It's all of that. And then you have social media, and they've so much more to deal with. So I think it's 100% worse. And these things aren't getting better. So
has it gone beyond repair?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. Like, I think we need more things like what we people do, what we're doing. Like, the answers are literally always in community. Like, one of the hardest groups you worked with was women in prison. And, like, young people are great. Do you know what I mean? I think if you can get them at, like, we were doing some research into our impact, and I think if you can get them at 11, 12, is amazing. Like, most of ours are between 40 and 15. But then when you go into adults and you're able to kind of turn them around now. Just up on our YouTube channel, you'll see a story of one of our a woman that experienced prison. She stays an extra night in prison. You'll hear the little video, but with such an impact on them. We're trying to figure out, what are we doing different that you didn't do so well in this? Or, and they all say, and the young people, it's like, you're like one of us. Do you know what I mean? There's that instant, and I don't share my story all the time. It's just an unsaid understanding, like you kind of, you're on the same level. Do you know what I mean? And the young people say it too, like, what, why did you like it so much? Oh, is there just sound? Or, do you know what I mean? It's like, we do this thing all together as a team. It's not me trying to change you. You're part of, there's a sense of belonging. I think there's a lot of research done around that as well. When people feel that sense of belonging, and they're connected to something bigger.
And with the sense of belonging, then reduces the need for discipline.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to be coming down on them, telling them to come in and do this and do that, because they want to be there.
But we make our own rules together, a group contract. So you can have your phone, you can take a picture, but if you're taking the piss and you're on it for ages or you're met or whatever, do you know what I mean? That's a different story. So we figure that out together. We talk as a group, not us giving out to you. Like, I'm not allowed on my phone either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's just nice.
Do you think, is there too much emphasis, particularly around Ballymun, in school and having to go in and learn Pythagoras' theorem and instead of developing skills?
I think now, in fairness, the school in Ballymun is really amazing at that. Like, they have us in there. They have lots of programmes that use sport. So I think as a model, what they're doing is really good.
Excellent.
They have a new principal the last good few years. But, like, they've chickens, they've bees, they've lots of amazing things going on that keep, like, young people active. But you then have that other side where, like, just such low expectations from some young people. And like reduced hours in school. There's a lot of kind of leeway given where I think it probably shouldn't. So, like, it's like we go into the youth group and run some of our classes and they're let run amok in there. And that's great because that's their space for doing that. So when we go in, we do have structure. It's not as bad as school, but, like, we've timeline and we've stuff to do, and when they feel part of that, they do it. So it's just finding the balance, I think.
I got a call recently from somebody. They were looking for work experience for their son, and they do, I think it's like a Monday, it's like a Monday every week for 6 months or something like that. But I said to him, what's he into, you know, what's he want to do, what's he interested in? He said basically it had got to the stage where they just needed a business to say he was there every Monday. And I just thought to myself, isn't that this teenager isn't caught up in anything. I mean, he's 100% and his dad is 100%, and I don't know his mum now or anything, but, like, he comes from a lovely area and lovely family. But I just thought, isn't that awful that they just want to tick a box here and say, will you just say he's there every Monday, instead of actually trying something out? Because when I was in TY, it was very similar. We had to say we were somewhere for 2 weeks. And I remember one of my work experience placements was in a car garage, because I was big into cars, and they put me cleaning shelves for the 2 weeks. And literally all I did for the 2 weeks in the car garage was clean shelves. I didn't get to see a car or wash a car or look at a brake pad or an engine.
Did you hate it?
I hated it because, do you know why I hated it? Because the shelves, it was this old garage that was 50 years old and the shelves were never cleaned. Never. So I was cleaning 30-year-old dirt in these shelves that probably didn't even need to be cleaned. Do you know, they were probably just holding car parts and I was ticking a box. But at the same time, and then I left school shortly after that. Not because of that, but I mean, there's a great opportunity there to try something out. And then, do you know what I did actually then? I worked with a fella doing stained glass.
Nice.
And we were making stained glass and I loved it. And I got my hands dirty, and you could cut the glass and you could mould the glass and the lead, and you could put this putty in between it. And I remember thinking, this is like, I really enjoy this.
Wow.
And when you put the glass into the door, you stand back and you say, like, I did that. And you had a great sense of achievement.
That's brilliant.
But unfortunately, that business then closed down some years later. But then I went on doing a bit of carpentry. But I do feel that there's too much emphasis in school, you know, you have to learn exactly what we're telling you to learn, and that's it. And we're not all the same.
Yeah.
We're not, like, don't get me wrong. You know, Michael might be very academic and wants to go on and be an architect and or go on and do teaching, and that's fine, and the best of luck to him. But then Damien sitting beside him mightn't be able to read a sentence, but will be the best plasterer or electrician you've ever seen in your life. Like, how come we're not taught how to change a plug?
I know.
Or to anything.
Like anything that you're going to actually use.
We were campaigning a long time ago in school to teach us how to drive. You know, like, bring us in driving lessons. Like, how come you can't give us driving lessons in TY and teach us a bit of cop on? Do you know?
I know.
Instead of just forcing the curriculum down your throat and saying, this is what you have to learn, that's the book you have to read, and this is what you'll be tested on.
It's a waste of time, isn't it?
It certainly feels like a waste of time for a percentage of people. Maybe not for everyone. But it does feel like... And then I see friends of mine who ticked all the boxes and went to college, and now they're miserable. And they're looking at me and they think I have this great life, thinking, Alan, you've tried 12 jobs. Now, some people will turn around and say, oh, you're a job hopper and you don't know what you're doing, and you'll never be happy and you'll never settle. And then you have another fella who's been in Trinity for the last 12 years working there, thinking, I wish I did that.
I know.
I wish I was able to go and work in 10 places for the last 10 years.
That'd be my thing. Just try everything.
Try everything, yeah.
Until you find the thing that lights you up inside. Or it's like what you said about, like, when they come to do our course, we're hands on. We give them scissors.
Yeah. I don't know what that humming is. Is it the light? Anyway, sure, we'll keep going. We're nearly finished. Sorry. You said you'd give them scissors.
Yeah, like we had writing the programmes, there was people nervous about the content at the start. But, like, once they're supervised and like that, like yourself, like you said, with the stained glass, the difference between that and the car shop.
Yeah.
Do you mean, let them do it. We're not the course that they need to get accredited. Like, we can lead them on to that with a bit of confidence and a bit of enthusiasm, because they've kind of, when are young people work in that environment, the creativity blows me away every single time. It's like every time I'd be crying at every single graduation. It's just the level of, like, the styles they do. I don't know, you might see some on the Instagram, but, like, blow us away.
Yeah. And I had a manager once that told me, never be afraid to make a mistake.
Oh, that's one of our rules.
Yeah.
Make loads of mistakes.
Yeah. And once you have a superior telling you that, you don't want to make the mistakes, but knowing the fact that if you do make one, it's okay.
And then we share stories. Like, I could give you a story of me and Lucinda, one of my colleagues, backstage at Paris Fashion Week. Like, fucked up one of them. Big time. She was one of the main ones that had, like, all we had to do was do these waves and whatever. We didn't do them right in any way, and we got a bollocking for it, but, like, we didn't ever do that again. Every single wave after that, the way he wanted it, that was perfect. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you need your little mistakes and your little wobbles to get to where you need to be.
What has been the lowest point of your life, if you were to think back and think that was the lowest time of my life?
On the floor in Beaumont Hospital, like, wanting to get better, my lungs not working, and snorting heroin. You don't even do that. Like, it's not even a thing, because I needed to get it in me, but I didn't know how to get better. And that was like, I was outside myself looking at myself on the floor. I didn't even have the energy to be standing up doing it. It was horrific.
How would you normally get heroin in?
I never injected. That's why my lungs were in such an awful state.
Like, you would smoke it?
Yeah, yeah.
So now at this stage you were snorting it?
My lungs were gone, like, yeah.
Any way to get it in?
Yeah, and with the intention of getting better. And I had to ring my friend to come up and bring me some stuff up, because I couldn't cope with the withdrawal. That's when I decided to split up with the partner, sell the house and, like, all that stuff. So that was a low, low, low. You're going to actually die.
What has been the highest point of your life to date?
Oh, I've just been loads lately. Like, loads. Just feel like today, just feeling like I have, even though I struggle financially, I struggle in loads of ways, I feel really successful, because, like, I'm happy every day no matter what happens, and I'm doing a job that I love, that I can see growing and developing. So these days, even like I've two teenagers, it's not it's not all fun and games, but yeah, success to me looks like what it is now.
And that day the 15-year-old came up to you has to have been one of the highlights.
Yeah, like when you like basically the program we designed was for little Eileen or little Gemma, my sister.
Yeah.
And that's little Eileen and little Gemma not going the road we did, or having a little, like, that time and space to see what he can do and see that there's different stuff. And we've created opportunity and we'll keep creating opportunity for those young people that stay with us.
I love the way you talk about little Eileen, because when I was with my therapist, she'd often talk about little Alan, you know, and what does little Alan want. And, you know, she'd always be telling me that you're never making any time for yourself and for little Alan, you know. And I remember one particular day she said, like, what makes you happy? Like, what would you like to do this evening? What is the one thing that you would like to do this evening that would make you happy? And I says to her, I'd love to just buy a steak now and go home and cook it.
Love that.
And that was it. And she said, and what else like? And I said, I don't know, maybe a few mushrooms and onions and just have a big steak. And I remember her saying to me, make sure you buy a steak on the way home. And I was just thinking, it's so simple, but we never give our little person any time, because it's all go, go, go. And it's all kind of, you can definitely fall into this, oh, poor me, and I'm the victim very easily, instead of saying, right, come on, let's dust ourselves off now, and let's do something that picks us up and get on with it, and let's sort this out. And I just remember that evening, and I remember the butchers I went into, and I remember getting the steak just for little Alan, just to cheer him up a bit.
That's unreal. I love that.
Yeah.
And that's all it is, those little things, like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was a turning point for me. Picked doing that kind of inner child work. I still go to therapy now sometimes, and I need it. I'd have little bouts where I'd dip in and out, but I've loads of tools now to keep myself well. But that inner child work was crucial for me. Like, you look after yourself, thinking about little Eileen, like, because that's who you're. You neglect yourself otherwise. Like, there's loads of ways you can kind of do everything for everybody else.
Yeah.
And make sure everything else, but really, once that's okay and you're looking after little Alan or little Eileen, everything else is great.
Yeah.
I think.
Is there anything the government can do better to help you? It's a kind of a powerful time at the moment with this election coming up and politicians promising the sun, moon and the stars. And it's also a good time to be approaching them, because you have a little bit of power now.
So, like,
in one sense, and then in another sense, sure, they'll fucking promise you the sun, moon and the stars anyway. But I'm just saying, with an election around the corner, their ears are perked.
I'm in my own little bubble. I never know what's happening outside of, like, my world, because it's so busy and I'm either working or up the mountain somewhere. But I did do the closing address at the National Conference for Social Enterprise last year, and the year before I spoke on the panel. So they're hearing us and they're involving us. And I think the last time I spoke, like, I did get some people approaching me, but like, it's like that, everything's time, like, we're building up our reputation and we've stuff to prove as well, and we're doing it. But I actually feel supported in that space from the people I've connected to, but like, it doesn't reflect in, like, cash in the bank, do you know what I mean? And that's really what people like us need, support. Like, that way what we're doing is so magnetic, like, everyone's just there, but really it's like,
you'd love a bit of security in the bank to keep this going.
Yeah, for sure. Be that with the government, philanthropy, whichever. It's kind of working itself out, but like, that, our strategy is, we're in the middle of working on exactly what that looks like. But yeah, like, I'm not political in any way, but if there's someone out there that thinks they can help us,
if there's somebody that can get us a grant or get us a few bob from somewhere, it'd go an awful long way.
100%.
How can people get in touch with you then, Eileen?
So LinkedIn, we're Hair Together CLG. Instagram is Hair Together CLG, and their website is hairtogethercLG.com.
Do you have an email address? It's probably on the website.
Yeah,
anyway.
Info at hairtogetherireland.com.
Info at hairtogetherireland.com. Well, look, I don't know what's going to happen from this podcast. I know it'll get a lot of ears and a lot of downloads, but I don't know what'll happen after that. But I would like to thank you for, first of all, coming all the way to Galway to share your story. Thank you for being so honest, because it's very hard to find honest people. And it's particularly hard to find honest, not honest females, but I'm going to say females to open up and share their story.
I think what makes it easier is just doing the whole 360 and come up. I think every time I share my story, like, so many people reach out and connect with it, and
yeah,
people I've met kind of, it helps people deal with their own stuff. And like, if you can't see it, you can't be it. Like, if more people spoke about things like this, I think people would understand.
Yeah.
The whole recovery journey, I don't think we talk about that enough. For even when you reach out, it's hard to find what ways can help you. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah,
yeah.
I know, that's why I know Peter has helped an awful lot of people since we had him on the podcast a few weeks ago. And sometimes it's just connecting with that one person, isn't it? Just making that little connection to make a stepping stone in the right direction.
Yeah,
that's all we need.
Fake it till you make a key. Like, the answers are in your community. Like, and it's like when I was going through recovery, so people are telling me, oh, you can't be with somebody in recovery, you can't, like, you have to meditate, and they're all the things I resisted, but they're all the things I look after now. So I think, believe in people that have gone before you, and do you know what I mean? It's like, it works.
The final question: what do you do for little Eileen these days?
Oh, everything. I try look after myself the best I can. I know I'm busy, but I do try and kind of make time for the things I love. And like nature, I'm so connected to nature now. That's like my, I love being just lost up in the mountains somewhere. We'd go wild camping and up hiking, and that's where I re-energise and find a bit of headspace and come back fresh again. And yeah.
Amazing.
It's good.
Have you ever climbed Crowpatrick?
I don't think I ever did that one. The boyfriend's from Wicklow, so he knows.
We'll have to bring you over and get you to do Crowpatrick.
Oh, I'd love that.
I'll go up Crowpatrick with you.
Will
you? Ireland's holiest mountain. God only knows.
I know. I think my sister put me off that. She tried to do it and came down with blisters and all sorts.
Ara, blisters. Blisters, schmisters. We'll get up. We'll get you up and down there, no bother at all. And God
I'll
only
hold
knows
you to that.
What we would find along our journey.
Oh, amazing. I love that.
Eileen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm sure your daughters will be dying to see you now and get you out of here, and you're going gallivanting around Galway for a while, Eileen.
We don't know what to do, yeah.
You don't know what to do.
No.
We'll have to find Galway's top 10 things to do for teenagers.
The bus tour is out the window anyway.
She wouldn't do the bus tour.
No.
And you've no interest on pennies, I asked you already.
Nah. Shame on, you've seen them all.
I know, when people come to Galway, it's the first thing they do. The pennies is huge here. But you don't care. All your pennies are huge in Dublin.
That's it.
Eileen, thanks so much.
The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by B.R.B. Homes. B.R.B. Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.